welcome to episode 66 of the Gaming Persona Podcast. This is the show that explores who we become when we play games. I'm your host, Dr. Gameology from Twitch and grad school classrooms across the country, and I'm joined by Jenny LeBron, my co-host from anywhere in life with a photo mode. So, Jenny, how are you doing this week?
I'm doing fantastic, and I'm excited to be here. And I was anticipating how you were going to say episode 66 this entire time, and I was not disappointed.
Excellent. Well, I'm glad to hear that. I have my coffee, so I'm also doing fantastic. But before we get into the substance of things for today, where can our listeners find us?
You can find my photography page on Instagram at j.lebronphotography or jlebronphotography.com if you're curious about what a nerdy person's photos look like.
And I'm Dr. Gameology on Twitch and other social apps. Of course, you can find me on this show every week. The Gaming Persona can be found on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, drgameology.com, and most anywhere else podcasts can be found. So, Jenny, what are we talking about from the world of video games today?
We are going to talk about couples playing games together, like It Takes Two.
That is going to be so fun. We have an amazing guest in my incredibly biased and subjective perspective on things. But before we get to that part of the show, we have a couple parts of our journey to go through today. So let's do The Ordinary World, where we share everyday life through our game. So, Jenny, what has your week been like in the world of gaming?
Well, drumroll, please. I finally played Final Fantasy. You weren't there for it, but I did.
Oh, man. My Monday nights are just a train wreck of task after task. If that's the day that you were able to play.
Yes, it was. And it's actually, so I made a plan last week to kind of tackle some things in my life that have been falling behind. One of those things is just taking time for myself to enjoy the people that I care about. So Final Fantasy made the list, and I have 2 days a week that I'm going to be playing. And I think there are 2 days that you can't play, which is so tragic.
That's hilarious, actually.
Oh, goodness. But yeah, so I started that last night. And it's funny, I hadn't played since March 25th. That was the last time I played. And today is May 10th, that's when we're recording this. So it was, when I logged in, I got this like notification, and it said, it like explained that I get the Returner's Bounty, which is for players that haven't logged in over 45 days. Raises hand in embarrassment.
Awesome.
Yeah, so I
called out by Square Enix.
I know. It was sad, but also exciting because I get an XP boost for our entire party if there's a mentor in the party. And as you guys know, one of our friends, Jess, is a mentor. So we grouped up last night and everybody else was getting my little XP boost. So it was nice. But we did an alliance raid, we did leveling roulette, I think we did a trial, and we just did some things to level up my Reaper, because I think she is level 77 right now, and I'm trying to get her up to 80 or 90, I don't know, so that I can start doing MSQ.
If you're in the 80s, you can do Endwalker as a Reaper if you get into the 80s.
Yes, which I'm not sure if I'm going to do that, but
you're going to do that.
I don't know. I kind of miss my healer. I really do. I've only played like 3 times in the past however many months, and every time I play, I have to relearn what the heck to do as a Reaper. So it was challenging at first. The entire Alliance raid, I didn't really do anything. I was just reading my moves and like following along.
That's amazing that you can clear alliance raids that way, though.
Yeah.
Do you remember any of the boss fights in particular? Was there anything memorable about which raid it was?
Which alliance raid?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was the one where there are 3 different groups and you have to, like, half of your group has to be on the platform and the other half moves forward and fights the big bad. And then, like, everyone always competes to see who gets theirs down first.
Oh, like you have 4 people on the pedestal that brings the light shield down?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. Those are the Realm Reborn alliance raids.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Well, those are a lot of fun, and they're quick, and they're low stress, and they really get you eased into the Final Fantasy style of Alliance raiding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was nice. It was a lot of fun. I played for a couple hours, and I'll probably be back on again on Thursday.
Well, excellent. Thursday is a game night for me.
That's what I thought. And then someone else said that you have a class that is...
Oh, okay, yeah. Thursday is not a very good game night for me because I'm teaching internship class, and it's three different classes, so the total length of time that I'll be working with those students every single Thursday is 10 months. And every Thursday, I spend the whole day thinking, I'm going to stream. And then my brain is just dead. And then I don't stream. So that is the reality, unfortunately. And whoever gave you that advice has been paying attention closely to the Discord messages. And I did post that it's really not fair to me to feel this letdown every Thursday when I run out of energy and I can't do it.
Well, if there's any Thursday where you have energy, but you don't really feel like streaming, you can always play with me.
Yeah, it is a lot easier to just share your I'm empty energy, not broadcasting live over the internet.
Yeah.
So it is actually... Oh, yeah. So I've been playing Final Fantasy 14. I did raid night last Tuesday, and we defeated the second Savage boss out of four. And that was my first clear on Hippocampus, is the name of the boss with multiple heads that can detach from its body and attack you independently.
I haven't seen this one.
Yeah, so that boss is kind of like a nightmarish dog version of It Takes Two. And it's been wrecking me for a couple months, so it was really nice to get that clear, and I feel really good about it. And we got to experiment for about an hour on the third boss, which I've never even watched a guide or video or read up anything. So my strategy was stay close to Jessica and hope that I don't die. But it turns out sometimes standing next to Jessica is exactly where you do die. And of course, we ran into yet again the idea that my idea of the center is their idea of north. So when they say go to the middle, I go to the center of the platform and they meant go north. Or maybe it's vice versa. I don't know what it is about the way my brain considers directional commands on a square or circular battle arena, but this happens every new boss where the way people think about directions is not the way I think about directions. And so we have the obligatory, I just get flattened by a mechanic by standing right where you're not supposed to stand. Like clockwork. Like it's not, I didn't make it. It's not scrambling. It's like, I authoritatively stand in the death zone. Proudly. Like I made it exactly where I want to be dead.
Right.
So that's, but I've also been playing Elden Ring a lot, and I actually was able to get a couple upgrades to my outfit, and I've gotten enough level ups in the game where my build, which is a mixture of magic with enough strength and endurance to wield a greatsword and a staff in my right hand, but my left hand usually has my wizard staff. And so I'm playing a sorcerer focused build. So my main attacks are magic, but my spear is empowered with a ice spell. So if I do a heavy attack with my spear, ice will go shooting in a straight line out. So I have that extension to my melee abilities. And I have a gigantic and glorious wizard hat.
Yes.
And so Kyrie in Elden Ring is finally feeling like this is my character in Elden Ring.
Yeah. Oh,
and Kyrie in Final Fantasy 14 is at item rating 595. So she's very powerful and I'm doing okay at Black Mage and we're clearing content and the group is just such a nice social atmosphere as well. So I cannot speak highly enough of getting to play with everybody on the We Got This team from Alea Yachta Est. Just really nice Tuesday evening. I really look forward to it. I had a lot of work stuff that got in the way for about a month. I missed like 3 raid nights in a row. So it was really nice to get to play last week. But that's the part of life we call adulting for us serious psychological types, right?
Yep.
So let's go to our call to adventure. This is where we get into our topic for the week. Coming up on this episode of The Gaming Persona, we have a guest joining. And our guest is the perfect person to talk about what it's like playing the game It Takes Two with me, the person that we know as Dr. Gameology. And that is my wife, Julia. Yay! Cheers everywhere. Sound effects. So It Takes Two is a game that I started hearing a lot of things about just a little while ago, and my wife started asking me to play it. And of course, I was busy and I had my list of games and I had things I needed to clear and I had content for different professional goals that I really needed to organize and get done or get working on. So we put it off. But then we finally joined the EA Play subscription program. So now we have all kinds of games from EA that we have access to that I can play on the PS5 or on my PC. And so that's one of them. So I sent you the trailer, Jenny, and said I would really like to do the episode this way. And you haven't played it yet. So here you go. So can you tell me, since I'm the one playing it and I'm not like an outside observer on it, what are you getting from the essence of the trailer and the research you've done on what this game is?
So when I watched the trailer, it looked like I would love this game. It seems like each level or stage is like a puzzle and you have to help each other get through it. And obviously it's something you play with someone else. So that's another point in my book. But then there's also the narrator, the Book of Love, who really shows that there's like story behind what's happening, which is kind of nice. Like there are other games where you do co-op puzzle solving that don't really have this kind of narrative aspect to it. So yeah, it looks amazing. It looks so whimsical and beautiful. The game itself is gorgeous. And it seems like there's all different kinds of like worlds and settings and environments that you get to experience. So yeah, it seemed amazing.
Yeah, the game really mishmashes a lot of things that you would find in two-player games, even if it's something that you only do for about 2 minutes. So in one of the opening levels, you're exposed to these mini games that are just laying throughout the environment of the world. And you know there's a mini game close by if the tambourine starts floating around in the middle of the air and starts shaking. That's sort of a signal of go into explorer mode and find the mini game. And the first one I remember doing with my wife was a whack-a-mole, where my character goes inside a box with 4 holes in it, and hers goes to the top of the box where the hammer is. So I have to use my control pad to tell the game which hole am I going to bounce out of. And then if I can pop my head up for 1 second without getting whacked, I get a point. But if my wife whacks me in the head with the hammer, she gets a point. And of course, it's timed, so we have to play actively. We can't do strategy that psychs people out with not making an attempt to pop out. So the whack-a-mole idea is I have to constantly get up there into the one of the 4 holes to try and earn a point. And then it's over and you go back to the level and running and jumping and dodging fireballs and navigating cliffs and climbing and swinging on ropes. And it's just a regular co-op platformer game, but there's these little moments where the game completely changes into something else. And I think that's really cool from a design perspective, is it kind of gives a loving nudge to all kinds of different things that we can play with other people.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited because I learned that you could play it on PC, and I would love to play this game.
Yeah. And then also after we talk about this with Julia, I have actually a couple of research articles that really will bring the psychology of games idea home in a thought-provoking kind of way. So let's go ahead and move into find your allies, because it's too dangerous to go alone. So for the first time ever on the Gaming Persona, I am excited to bring the most important part of the life of the person that's named Daniel Kaufman. Not Dr. Kaufman, not Dr. Gameology, but the person that is Daniel. We're actually going to get a big part of that while we find out all the flaws in my way of living life and loving video games. But there is actually one person that I have always loved more than video games, and she's on the show, Julia, my wife, the love of my universe. Welcome to the Gaming Persona.
Ever thought modern video games should be more interesting? At The Gaming Blender, we take randomized genres, mechanics, and make a new game every episode.
I've added permadeath.
We have a survival game of a hardcore simulation, which could be House Flipper, and with the permadeath of XCOM, then that all has to be an action adventure.
Yes.
Ooh, dear.
Yes.
And sometimes it doesn't quite work.
And you have a construction off over the course of the narrative.
A construction off? The way we can do this is that we ditch your idea entirely.
Entirely.
Check out The Gaming Blender on all your favorite podcast platforms now.
You're making me tear up a little. Hi.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh. See, this is what happens when you min-max your love words the way that you work on your gear stats in an MMO.
That's great.
Thank you so much for taking a little bit of time out of your afternoon to be on our show today, dear.
Yeah.
So, Jenny, like we covered in the intro, my wife and I have been playing a video game on the PS5 called It Takes Two. And it was so obvious with me being a counselor who has watched many couples fall apart in front of my very eyes and trying to create conversations that are helpful for them that we need to cover this game on the show. And what better person to make sure I talk about this game in the right way than the person that I try, try my hardest to use the ideas that come across in this game. So, Julia, can you tell us a little bit about what it's been like playing It Takes Two, the game, but also what it's been like playing It Takes Two with me?
I honestly think that this game was designed to play as couples. Like, it'd be weird if I played this with like a sibling or like my child, but it's focused on like making your relationship better. Like in the story, they're a married couple who are on the verge of divorce, and you know, they have to go through all of these trials and everything to try to make the relationship stronger. Us being the relationship that we have, obviously we're not getting divorced, but we're still taking those lessons of how to like make your relationship stronger, and like it applies in real life. So it's kind of like it's a game, but it's also like marriage counseling a little bit.
That's so cool.
Yeah. So it's been really fun. I know that I get very frustrated very easily in video games, and I have that anxiety of like, oh no, whatever I do affects what you do, Daniel. So I have to like make sure that I don't screw up. And then I'm constantly saying I'm sorry over and over. And he's just like, stop apologizing.
Oh. You know what's funny? That was like the first thing I thought of when I saw the trailer. I was like, oh man, this means that if I mess up, we both mess up. And this would be really nerve-wracking for me.
Because sometimes it's my fault because I didn't shoot the thing the right way. But sometimes it's Daniel's fault because he crashed our flying ship into a wall. So
our flying underwear plane.
Flying underwear plane. Yeah. Yes. I like the whimsical world that you're in. It has very much kind of like a Tim Burton-esque or like
Pixar. Pixar Tim Burton kind of.
That's a really great descriptor. That's what I got from the trailer.
I don't know if you're familiar, Jenny, with the Little Big Planet games. It reminds me a little bit of the Little Big Planet games, because there are parts in that game where you do need teamwork in order to complete a task, but the whole entire this game is teamwork. Like, you cannot play this game by yourself.
That is actually the biggest game design thing that jumps out to me. So of course I'm playing this game and I'm enjoying it and I'm playing it with my wife and we're having to form a team in order to succeed, right? But then there's the Dr. Gameology part of me. The gears are turning. It's like, oh, we're going to talk about this on the podcast. We're going to do blog articles about it. We're going to possibly form a couples therapy research study using this game. And okay, yeah, the mentor, Jenny. So using that language from the monomythical hero's journey, the mentor in this game is a Spanish book of love.
I love it.
Okay. And it is so cool because my mentor from Asbury was a Hispanic male and kind of talked like this book. So I'm having all these messages that I learned in a classroom about how you do family systems therapy and emotional focused couples counseling. And I'm seeing Dr. Javier Sierra in this book kind of a little bit. And I'm like getting brought back to those days when I was the learner. But also from a game design perspective, there is almost nothing in this game that you can do alone. And it takes two unless you have a really good player and then they can solo the game and just drag someone to success with them. It takes two. There is like the weapons in the very first level, honey, if I get this wrong, I think this was the first level. It was the nail gun and the hammer.
Yes, I was the hammer and you were the nail gun. So
yeah.
He had to shoot the nails at walls and then I had to use my hammer to go swing on them and then go, you know, flip buttons and stuff in order to release doors so he can get to the side I'm on. So it's literally solving puzzles in that way. Yeah.
This sounds so cool. I love puzzles.
Yes. You would love it, Jenny. It's very, very fun.
And what does it play on?
We're playing it on the PS5. I know that you can play it on other systems, I believe. Actually, I say I know, but I believe.
Is it on PC? That's my question.
Yes, you can play it on Windows platforms. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the cool thing about it is you have to coordinate your timing a lot. There was a situation last night. We were in a space-based level. You go inside your daughter's mind and oh my gosh, we need to keep it simple really quick. The setup for this game, I already mentioned my research study idea. And if someone's listening to the show and wants to do it and beats me to it, I have a lot of things going on. So by all means, you know, do the It Takes Two research study. But you have a couple who wants to get divorced, a husband and wife with a daughter, and the daughter does not want her parents to get divorced. This is a very common setup for storytelling. And she has some tears come out of her eyes in the shed in the backyard, and they fall on these clay and wooden voodoo dolls that she made of a woman and man who don't look like her parents, but
they represent them
and the tears suck their souls when they take their power naps that afternoon into the dolls. They wake up in the dolls. And so the setup for the levels is you're trying to get to your daughter because you have this theory that her tears will send you back to your actual bodies because nobody wants to be tiny miniature clay and wood voodoo dolls. Mm-hmm. So there's a level where somehow we transcend the physical reality and we go into the daughter's mind, which is outer space, of course. And we were doing this. So your powers and your weapon abilities change every level too. You do not carry the same hammer and nail as only the first level. And then you have a new set of powers the second level. Like I was Nectar and Julia got to be explosive matches shooting out of a gun. So she would explode the Nectar, but the enemies would not explode if I hadn't nectared them first. So, you know, you can't even defeat a single enemy by yourself in this game. And dear, would you like to tell what happened when we were using our space powers? Because I've been rambling.
Oh, and yeah.
I think, are you talking about
where we got the trophy?
Oh, yes. Yes. Tell the trophy story.
Okay. So we had this one platform where First of all, let me preface this by saying that his power in this particular level was a belt that would shrink him really tiny or make him very big. And my power were these space boots that made me be able to walk upside down and anti-gravity and all that good stuff. So I had to get up onto this level. So he turned big, jumped on the like a little thingy and made me shoot up in the air. And I got up on the thing. And I sat up there forever trying to figure out, okay, now how do I get Daniel up here with me? So finally he goes, oh, you need to ground pound down to me and then I will go shooting back up. So I'm like, okay. So I grounded without even hesitation. Like I just did it immediately, but he was still in his tiny form. So when I did it, he goes shooting out into orbit, like, and I killed him and we got a trophy for it. So, I mean, it wasn't a bad thing, but yeah, he told me what to do and I did it. No hesitation. He's like, I wasn't ready yet. But yeah, what am I?
There are so many situations too, where the I'm not ready yet thing happens. Like there was a wall jumping puzzle where I was controlling which wall would pop out of the sidewall. And so if I have the left in the middle, Julia can wall jump and get up to the top on the left side. But eventually she has to switch to the right side. So I need to have the middle and the right platform. I did not put the right platform up for her and she fell to her doom. And it's all about timing and communication and coordination. And there are so many times where you just lose a life, but you rematerialize on the last safe platform that you were standing on in most situations in this game. So there are times where I'll have an idea of how we can do it better. And sometimes it's received really easily. And other times it's more of a, stop telling me what to do. I obviously know the solution to this.
I wonder who you could be right there.
Well, also, I just want to say I'm not perfect, that sometimes I'm the person who's like, oh, this is so stupid. So it's just a really good activity to help you realize you're not perfect and to practice being imperfect with your game partner. In this case, my game partner is my permanent teammate for life. And that's actually a big thing in couples counseling. Sometimes as the counselor doing these sessions and trying to guide people to these ideas of happiness and collaboration, I don't see...
Collaboration!
Oh, yeah, there we go. I don't see the people as teammates. And it's because they don't do very many things like it takes two together, where they're in it together and they rely on each other. I think a lot of times it's just two solo players in life that decide to be around each other a lot, but they're still doing everything solo, just maybe they live in the same space.
Yeah, it's like as you guys are describing this game, I'm just thinking of like real world scenarios or like just real world descriptors in relationships that this game would build. Like you mentioned communication, that's probably huge in this game, and it's huge in a relationship too. Collaboration. You need to work together with your partner to make things work smoothly in your relationship. Compassion when you don't do something right, and just like fun and happiness.
Yeah. It creates a moment too where we get to be in the living room. It's a co-op game. So a lot of games where you can play co-op, what I mean by that with surprise is Mario Kart's a really good example of this actually. It still splits the screen so multiple people can play. A lot of video games that say they have a co-op mode do not do that anymore. They just have multiplayer where you can form a party using the console and both of you need a console, both of you need a copy of the game, and both of you need a TV somewhere that you're playing full screen, and you both need a headset or to use the Discord app on your phone. So you're playing together alone.
Local co-op. That's the term, like being able to be in the same room.
Yes. You know, it's really nice that you gave the vocabulary. I think that I was going to say local co-op is a lost art form in video games. But I think too, what you're showing, Julia, that I'm really happy to point out, because I think this is one of the things I enjoy the most about our relationship, is that we have things where one of us likes it more than the other, but we still do a lot of those things together because it's not like the other person hates it. It's just like, obviously, you know, there are things that will happen Epcot that Julia will enjoy more than me, but I still like walking around there. Just like there are things that will happen on my PS5 that I clearly enjoy more than Julia, but she will enjoy playing them with me. And so I think that this game just really draws out some of that common ground and makes you experiment with the common ground and see what it's all about. It's another set of 1 to 2 hours where we get to sit in the living room and interact and problem solve together. So I want to kind of include some of the things that we usually include when we have a guest on our show. And Julia, you gave us your personality letters and your motivation scores. So while we still have a little bit of time, I just want to talk about how some of these ideas have appeared on a previous episode. One of our first player type episodes was actually about the gardener. And honestly, I was thinking a lot about you when we recorded that. But we didn't have definitive scientific proof. So everyone, my wife got the gardener motivation type, and we've included a description of that. And basically, you're looking for a quiet, relaxing, task completion, collection focus kind of game activity. And you like planning out ways to get that trophy, star, collection, building, and continue moving forward. And one of the big games for this is Animal Crossing, which is one of those blind spots for me that I can't even talk about Animal Crossing because I've never played it. So can you talk a little bit while we're on it? You know, could you explain what it is about Animal Crossing and the gardener player type that really explains the things you enjoy the most about video games?
Yeah. Literally, I have like in my routine, it's like, oh, I have to log in and check my village. I go into Animal Crossing at least once a day and I have water the flowers, hit the rocks and get the things to sell to get bells because I'm trying to expand my storage in my house. And it's just for me, it's relaxing because it is task completion. I want to collect every single thing in the game. So when I got the game, the first thing, I have to build my aquarium. I have a very deep love for aquariums, as you both know. And I wanted to get every single marine animal. So I had it completed like within the year because the way that this game is it's seasonal. So every month there are different things available. So you can, oh no, it's June, so I can catch dragonflies or whatever it is. So for me, you know, I've had the game for a couple of years now and I have everything completed. My aquarium, my bugs, everything's done. The only thing that I have never completed is my artwork. So I'm still trying to get all of the art, and the art guy only comes in once every couple of weeks. So that's taken some time. But I really enjoy Animal Crossing for that. But I also really like my little villagers. They're little animals. They're super cute. And sometimes they'll just tell you, hey, I want to leave. And I never stop them. I'm like, oh, move on. Go to a different distant lands and I'll get a new friend come in and I'll be friends with this bunny instead of this cow, you know? So for me, it's literally just relaxing, you know, like I like to just water my flowers and shoot balloons and get presents from my villagers. It's always been that way for me for games. Like that's why I like Pokemon so much is because I want to collect, I have to catch them all, you know? So every game that I've had, this is going back to like when we used to play SWTOR together, one of my favorite things was the Datacrons, like collecting those. Because I like collections. I don't know if that's just a game thing. It's a thing in real life too, because, you know, as my husband will tell you, I collect many things. And I don't know. I guess that's why I'm the gardener. It's funny because when you say gardener player type, most people automatically think Animal Crossing because you garden in that game, but gardening is actually the one thing I do the least. So it's funny.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, completion is one of those components when you go like deeper into the gamer motivation profile. And if you take a look at your scores, the highest ones are in discovery, design, and completion. So the collecting thing makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I also have a thing with checklists. So if I'm playing a game and I have like a quest list, I want to check off all of the quest lists. So I heard that the game that Daniel's currently playing, Elden Ring, he said there's no quest list. You have to just remember. I was that's my nightmare. Like that I don't have a list to check off. I don't want to play it, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, there is a list. You just need to buy a journal and write it down yourself.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, man. When you mentioned Datacrons, I want to tell, I want to include this in the show. This happened to me this morning. I was playing Elden Ring, and because I'm really trying to finish it, because there's a spot in my book I'm writing where I really want to be able to comment on multiple endings. Specifically, I want to bring in Elden Ring. So I'm on this castle and I'm jumping across the different ledges and things. And I jump over to this staircase. It's like, oh, good. It's a staircase. This is much easier to walk on than the ledges I've been jumping on for 5 minutes. And then a giant metal ball rolls down the stairs and kills me.
Of course it did.
And right. Of course it did. And that is what it's like playing Elden Ring.
Yeah.
But anyway, back to the, there have been times where the three of us have been on raid teams and have played, you mentioned Star Wars The Old Republic, dear, and Jenny, you were a part of that original raid team.
Yes, I did not have the affinity for Datacron hunting as you did. But
but I'm also thinking about all the activities we've done in SWTOR and Final Fantasy to collect mounts.
Yeah.
And so if it's an achievement thing where you have to defeat a boss, but there's a mount there, sometimes we can work on playing harder together, which is my motivation type, to win tough things, but not necessarily either of your motivation types. So collections actually can bridge the gap to create common ground.
Yeah. And I'm thinking about that too, because when I think about me trying to get all of the horses in Final Fantasy, it wasn't about collecting all of them for me. It was just about playing with my friends. So, yeah.
But you got all the horses, though, right?
Yes, I did on the first try every time. So,
yeah.
I hate you. No, I have them all too. It's just, it was like a big thing. Like, I was like, oh, we're going to go horse, like, collecting. And I was very excited about that. But when it was like, oh, we're going to do this raid and just to complete the boss, I'm like, why? I'm not going to get a pretty at the end.
Yeah.
Extrinsic motivators. We need to go get the birds, though. We're all level 90 now. I'm sure we could get the birds.
I have a few of them.
I have all the birds, I think.
Oh, well, you're ahead of us then.
She's a gardener.
Yeah.
So, dear, I have a question, and it's a funny question. It's not really going to put you on the spot. What do you think about the Psych Squad's decision to refer to you in Discord as Mrs. Gameology?
I just found out about that a couple days ago, actually.
I know, yeah. So I had already asked you to be on the show, and then a message pops up asking, you know, what does Mrs. Gameology think about such and such game? And you were looking at my phone because I needed you to search for something while I was driving, and you're like, what is this?
It popped up and I'm like, they call me Mrs. Gameology? I was not aware of this. I don't have a problem with it. I think it's endearing. It surprised me. I was just like, oh, I didn't know that they talked about me. It was a joke because it was a psychology thing that someone had said that the reason that you nabbed me was you used Pavlov's experiment on, but with candy. And I was like, definitely not what happened. I don't think he's ever like given me candy unless it was an occasion like Valentine's Day or something. He doesn't just walk around and be like, here, have a piece of candy. Come here. Candy equals kisses. Which is, I don't know, it's funny, and I don't mind it.
Do you have any other follow-up questions, Jenny? Did we cover what we needed to?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, Julia, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show with us today. We're going to move into the ascent to elevate the topic, but you have already given us the biggest, most valuable information for our episode today. Thank you so much, and can't wait have you on again when we do more co-op or collections. So now we're at the ascent, where we elevate the topic. So, Jenny, I had a lot of fun with that segment.
Me too. That's
a really big risk of, in my head, you know, it's like I'm bringing a really important part of my personal life into the show. And so I know when you're listening to podcasts, a lot of times the better ones, you do feel like you're getting to know the person because you're hearing their ideas. But there's always that little bit where this is who I am when I'm recording a podcast. But that really was like what it's actually like to, you know, walk into the living room and be able to talk to me.
Yeah. Yeah. That was awesome. I'm really glad she came on.
Yeah. So we actually have, for the ascent today, we have two very different research studies that came out in the last 10 years. One of them's 10 years, one of them is 4, and talk about how video games factor into the relationship of a couple. And I think it's really interesting because this is how video games factor into counseling with couples and talking about the psychology of what can video games be, both not good and also very incredibly good. So the first study is called Gaming in the Game of Love: Effects of Video Games on Conflict in Couples. So, of course, the game It Takes Two is about a couple that's experiencing frequent conflicts. Okay. The first boss in that game, if I remember correctly, is a vacuum cleaner that broke. And then instead of making the attempt to fix it, one of the members of the couple threw it in the shed in the backyard where it continued to be broken. And they bought a much better vacuum to use in the house, which is great until you animate the broken vacuum and it's sitting there in the shed with feelings of loathing and low self-worth because you abandoned it and it has no purpose anymore and it doesn't even work right. And then you become small, shrunken characters and have to win a boss battle against this very angry vacuum. Okay. And so the couples have this back and forth dialogue about, I thought you said you fixed it, or blah, 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 or no, you bought the new one. So it's all the finger pointing, and the game has so much finger pointing in the dialogue between the couple who's stuck in this bad situation. So their peril relies on them overcoming the times that they didn't tell the whole truth or let their partner down in some way. Okay. So before I talk about this amazing chart with arrows connecting all the squares and going in all directions, what do you think will happen when we break down this study, Jenny, talking about how video games become a factor in couples' relationships?
Are you asking me like what I think the results of the study are going to be?
Well, just when I bring up this idea, what's your initial thought about, oh, this is probably going to be dot, dot, dot?
Yeah. Okay. So I like the way that It Takes Two approaches this situation, but something tells me that this is a unique game and that the results might show that there's an increase in conflict, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. So this chart looks at couples in which one member of the couple is a video game player and the other is a video game non-player or possibly even a video game rejecter. Okay. And one of the things that always puzzles me as a mental health professional is how do you end up in these really important high intimacy relationships where a thing that you enjoy doing for fun is so totally rejected by your partner? And I know for me, I would never thrive in a relationship where my spouse hates video games.
Yeah. I feel like, I think there's a lot there. I don't want to like make any assumptions, but I can see where two people who aren't on the same page with video games can make it work. But if you're like fully rejecting it, then that's a different story.
Right. So this article, this first one, is by Coin et al. From 2012, and it is published in Family Relations, and it looks at the connections statistically between video game use and aggressive behavior in your relationship. So physical aggression and relational aggression. And the way that they are finding these connections is by looking at time problems in your use of video games and content problems in the relationship from your use of video games. Okay. So basically, if you are playing a game that is making you focus on different styles of aggression or conflict resolution, and so you become more angry as a person, that kind of an idea, or you didn't do something that would have been valuable for your relationship quality because you were busy playing video games. And it breaks down what this looks like when the game player is male as one category of connections, and what this looks like when the video game player is female. So there's lots of really valuable information here, and there's lots of statistically significant connections, but not every connection is a significant one. And a lot of the significant ones first coming out of just playing the video game comes from the male playing, but the female reporting the play problem. Okay. But in those cases, there is a strong correlation between if the female's reporting a problem for their male game player, the male is also admitting there's a problem from their point of view as well. Okay. Now, we're trying to take something that is a little bit complex and just boil it down to a simple conversation.
Complex is an understatement when it comes to this chart.
There are many arrows going in all directions, and there are asterisks on a lot of the connections, which means a statistically significant result. So basically what we conclude from this study is if you're not on the same page with your partner about what video games are as a source of fun and enjoyment, or even a way to connect with your own abilities as a person for problem solving, like I tend to look at them, then everything you do while you're logged in playing a video game is going to be driven by the motivation to avoid your relationship goals and adult responsibilities. So therefore, if I'm having a disagreement with my wife, who's just on the show, and I was playing a video game before that disagreement, a disagreement that probably has nothing to do with video games, the correlation in the mind of the relationship, her mind and my mind, and then collectively our minds, will conclude that that quarrel is because of video games, right? And so a lot of times, that is distracting. We can't actually do anything with it because the problem is you had a disagreement and you disagree fundamentally about what is okay to do in your day. And so if there is no common ground there to collaborate, then you're just going to disagree. You're going to be unhappy. And that total unhappiness will eventually lead to louder voices and possibly aggressive behavior that can be recorded. Well, for a lot of people. So that brings us to the second study. And this one is much more the It Takes Two and Dr. Gameology direction of discussion about what video games can be. This study was about sociality in single-player games. And it's a case study of tandem play amongst friends and couples. So this is not an It Takes Two situation. That is co-op playing, but this is single player games where we can pass the controller and share the experience together. Or I've actually listened to many podcasts and seen many videos where a person will watch the complete play of their partner and be there as a permanent commentary partner or collaborator. So when you do that, Jenny, what is it that you're aiming to get out of the experience?
Well, I've been on both sides of that. So I have been the player of a game where my partner was just kind of there as a guide and an encourager and just there to have fun with. And then I have also been the person who likes to watch my partner play a game. So in the first scenario, it's just nice to have somebody there who might have a different perspective, might be able to help me if I get stuck on something, might be able to, you know, just be there for extra fun. I mean, everyone knows if you've listened to the podcast that I play video games with other people, even games that aren't meant to be played with other people. So I resonate very much with the content of the study. But and then in the other scenario, I really enjoy watching people play video games. Like I got really into Twitch one summer, and it's similar to that. But when it's someone who you are with and who is important to you, it's just fun to see them succeed at things that are difficult. It's fun to help. It's fun to make jokes and just contribute to the positive gameplay.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I know for me, I usually am the game player in these situations. So this is not something that I think that would fill me up with excitement. And that's just because I want to be the person who plays the game and does the problem solving and has the controller. My incessant need for control over the situation. Right.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But this study was published in 2018 and presented at the 51st Hawaii International Conference on System Sciences. And it's by Consalvo et al. And it was able to identify a lot of bottom line insights into what happens when you do choose to play games together as a couple or with close friends. So we have a list of bullet points here, Jenny, that are my summary of what this article concluded. So I would like to just pass these back and forth and share them, maybe say one thing or two about each one so that our audience can get the full experience of our ascent through the topic. And would you like to start us off?
Yeah, sure. The first bullet point, player pairs often have unique processes for decision making. So I actually mentioned this when I was talking about when I play with my partner. It's just nice to have an extra perspective on things. He might go about a puzzle in a totally different way than I would, and that's really helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. We don't have to do things exactly the same way. So the next point is closeness shifts fluidly during play between cooperation and critique. We talked about this in the part of the episode that was interview with my wife.
Yeah.
A lot of times the harsh feelings in relationships that are struggling comes from there's no apparatus for sharing any kind of feedback with your partner. It either is a congratulations or silence. If it's anything short of good job, then we're going to throw our gloves down and put up our fists.
Yeah.
In the form of words, hopefully. So I think if you're playing a video game together, eventually you're going to have to cross that bridge and realize, oh, they really do like me and believe in me and trust me. They're just offering an idea that maybe I didn't see it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So couples can experience benefits with co-op approaches for solo games. Is that next line another one?
Yeah, it's the same bullet point.
Okay. Narrative can have positive impacts on couple-focused gaming experiences. So yeah, I mean, this is kind of general in saying that, like, for example, I played Final Fantasy X for the first time a couple months ago, and it's nice to be able to have somebody there who has already played the game, who, you know, has already gone through the whole story, who is already excited about the story, is able to be there to give me tips on, you know, what to do. So that's, it's overall for me, it's pretty positive. Even if it gets into the critique area, I like being critiqued when it comes to video games. I love knowing what I can do better. So yeah.
Yeah. Also in the relationship, if your partner wants to make a reference about Tidus or Aron or Yuna or Waka or Blitzball or Sin or Spira, you could theoretically know what that conversation's about and be excited to talk with him back with ideas that are yours. So a lot of times this disconnect in relationships, especially with the I like video games, my partner doesn't kind of problem, is you don't have that common ground to bounce ideas off of each other. You know, so if I want to make a reference to Rapture from BioShock, my wife will be all over that and she'll be able to send that back to me. And then my idea can build beyond what it was 5 seconds ago. That's powerful. And that's not even a co-op game. It's just a virtual story that we both have built some kind of affinity or connection to. So games can be a primary motivation for coming together moments. They're an opportunity to do something together. And it's an active activity too. I cannot express this enough. I will die on this hill, Jenny. I will always believe playing a video game with someone is better than watching a show on your favorite streaming app with someone.
Oh, definitely.
Because you are both doing it. And there's something about that active nature of a video game that makes us part of the story, and it makes it matter.
Yeah. Social enjoyment of a game can occur even if the game is not liked by both players. So you talked about this a little bit when Julia was just on, how you both like to do things together, even if you're not that into whatever her style of play is or a particular topic in a game. It's just nice to just spend time together, spend time accomplishing something together. It's not really about whether or not you like the game. It's about how much you like your partner.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, this study talks about a game where both people reported they did not enjoy the game. And the game, by the way, was the Game of Thrones game that was created by Telltale Games.
Oh.
Yeah, so this is a story-focused decision-making game where you interact with the characters and make decisions about alliances and things. And this is the same studio that made the much-acclaimed Walking Dead video games. And the Game of Thrones one was actually not their best effort. But they also did Batman and actually several others. Wolf Among Us, I think, is another title that they did. So they're really known for character-driven story and choice-based games. And in this instance, the data suggested that you enjoy the game because you're playing it with someone, not because of what the game itself is in a vacuum.
Yeah.
Vacuums keep coming up this episode. It's so weird. All right. So I'm going to do the last two points together. Social viewing is inherent in gaming. Knowing when to comment and when to view the gaming events is part of that social experience. And tandem play adds a feeling of natural interaction outside the gameplay. So we kind of covered that if you are playing a game together, you have that shared experience. You can talk about it while you're going through day-to-day life with this person who you probably like at least a little bit. Yeah. So these are all the takeaways from this conference presentation. And I think if we take both articles together, Jenny, we get a really clear picture of how video games are perceived in our society at this point in time. They're either a reason to explain everything you're doing wrong in your life and why you're not successful and it's hard to be around you, or they're amazing places to congregate and share experiences. And because we did these together, the value in our relationship has built to something that I wasn't fully aware of before.
Right. I wonder which one's more, I don't know the words I'm looking for.
I need those words. What do you, just let it go, Jenny. Let it fly.
No, I wonder which one we resonate more with.
Oh, I'm definitely Consalvo at all 2018 with the player pairs, unique decision-making processes, tandem play.
I think this would be a whole different podcast if you weren't.
Oh, man, this would be the Gaming Despair podcast where we talk about. This is the show that explores all the things that are wrong in our lives and we blame video games. I'm your host, Dr. Sadology.
Oh, what a terrible alternate universe.
Dark Timeline episode part two.
We do really need to do one of those.
Oh, man, once we have an angle. Like, what if we do an entire episode that captures the emotion of being in the land of Elden Ring?
Oh, my goodness.
When I finish Elden Ring, Jenny, we're going to do an episode where we completely talk about the triumph over despair.
Yes, we should. That would be a good episode. Yeah.
So many foreshadowed concepts in this. I hope someday we look back and we'll find all the ideas that we never did.
I know. I was just going to say, we need to like bookmark this and timestamp it and come back to it when we're...
Oh, man, that's Monday, so much work. Like, no, let's go on the return where we go back to our daily lives and take the next step forward. So, Jenny, so many things happened in this episode. I know it's a full discussion of co-op gaming and the value of couples playing games together. What do you think you're going to take with you from the experience of our talk today?
Well, I am not at the point where I could see playing a game like It Takes Two would, like you were saying, would like ring all these alarms and have me say, oh, this needs to be a topic for our show, or this would be, you know, a great tool to use in therapy. But it's always just so like, well, duh. Once we talk about it, it's like, oh my gosh, yeah, this would be amazing. This is such, like, they talk about divorce in the show. The whole point, or in this game, the whole point of the game is for you to collaborate and communicate and get to the point where you are in a better place in your relationship. So it is something that I've done all the time. I play solo games. I play any kind of games with my partner all the time. It's like a huge part of my life. And it's definitely something that brings us together. It's something that I'm grateful that I chose someone who is into games and video gaming and likes to do the things that I like to do.
Yeah, that common ground is so important in terms of compatibility with a partner.
Yeah. Well, and also for those who are listening who their partners are more into gaming than they are, I challenge you to look at it differently. Look at it in a way that might be something that brings you together rather than drives you apart.
Absolutely. If your partner is playing an MMO, create a character.
Yeah.
You know, just being able to understand the viewpoint, even if you think the game is trash, the shared viewpoint of, oh, I can see why they are playing different quests, or it is cool when you look back on your character and their outfit is more interesting to you than it was a day ago.
Right.
I just think that understanding how the person that you love is experiencing fun in a fulfilling way in this activity, if you reject that entire activity, that's such a strange choice for the desire to have warmth and connection in a relationship. You know, that would be like your kid saying, I really want to learn to play guitar. And you just like, not only do you stop them from getting access to a guitar, but you cancel their Spotify too.
Yeah.
Right. Like you can't listen to music.
That's a great comparison because that's what video games are to a lot of people.
I know. That's what we've been talking about for almost 2 years. So I have one last quest for everyone to collect for today and move forward. Find the things you love and do them with the people you love. It takes two or more and continue the journey.
See you next week.